Some of us might not like that style of music, but call someone who loves it, who might like it, and let the younger generation hear that. You know what? It's okay to hip-hop and rap, but do it for the Lord. It's okay. All right? So he'll be here next week. We're going to have about 30 minutes on with him, a few of his songs, and I'm excited about it to hear what he has to say, how God has transformed him and changed his life to sing his use his gift for the Lord. I got about 1 minute to go here. I am going to close the show out with a young man that I know. That's a bass player who writes his own music. And the title of the song is called Great Day. And his name is Michael Tate. I call him the Great Tate. So check this out. I'm having him on the program. You know, it's more than singing. It could be just talent and music. So thanks for joining me. And I guess I can just say have a great day. And we'll see you back next week on 30 Minutes with Charles Heisman.
You are listening to KBOO, Portland, on 90.7 FM, K282BH, Philomath, on 104.3 FM, and K220HR, Hood River, on 91.9 FM.
Tune in to KBOO on Wednesday, November 26th from 6 to 7 p.m. for the KBOO Youth Collective presidential election.
We'll hear from 8 different candidates in competitive debates.
And you can vote for the president of the underground.
Again, that's the Youth Collective presidential election on Wednesday, November 26th at 6 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Bureau of Labor and Industries Child Care for Construction, working to provide resources and support for new journey workers and their families in partnership with Business Oregon. More info at oregon.gov/BOLI/apprenticeship under the link Financial Assistance for Registered Apprentices.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. We all know love can be a powerful force, but what is it actually comprised of, and how can we use the healing power of love for good, even in times of chaos? Today's guest on Pathways, his life work is to foster pure, unlimited love, to find inner peace, and to achieve cultural transformation through a blend of the highest levels of scientific research, spiritual philosophical reflection, and effective practice. Our guest today is Stephen Post, author of the new book, Pure Unlimited Love, Science in the 7 Paths to Inner Peace. Stephen is the director of the Center for Medical Humanities, Compassionate Care, and Bioethics at the Renaissance School of Medicine at Stony Brook University. He founded the Institute for Research on Pure Unlimited Love with initial support from his mentor, Sir John Templeton. Dr. Post is the author of several books, including Why Good Things Happen to Good People, How to Live a Longer, Happier, Healthier Life by the Simple Act of Giving. He's authored over 400 articles in peer-reviewed journals and has been interviewed by leading newspapers around the world. He's an elected member of the Philadelphia College of Physicians, the New York Academy of Medicine, and the Royal Society of Medicine, as well as a founding fellow of the International Society for Science and Religion. He lives on Long Island, New York. Well, hello, Stephen, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Thank you, Paolo. It's a delight to be with you. We finally get it together, and here we are.
I know, it's beautiful. Well, tell us, first of all, why did you decide to write? You've written so much, and why did you decide to produce this particular work?
You know, my feeling is that there's so much polarization in our culture. And it's not like when I was a kid. My grandmother was very Irish. My other grandmother was very British. And they could argue at the kitchen table, but it never got too severe. I think we need to remember about love and universal respect, kindness, and also tolerance, for sure. So it's a book about how love can be applied to solve a very practical cultural problem.
Okay. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty of it, how did you get the Dalai Lama to write a foreword to your book? What is your connection with the Dalai Lama?
Well, my connection with the Dalai Lama is through Victor Chan, who runs the Dalai Lama Center in Vancouver, Canada.
Uh-huh.
But also, the Dalai Lama won the Templeton Prize some years ago, and I've known him through that because I'm a member of the Templeton Foundation board.
I see. Okay. Now, this is a book on pure unlimited love. Boy, that is a mouthful.
It is.
and you know, this word love is a big word. It's got so many different definitions. It means so many different things to different people. I love chocolate. I love my girlfriend. I love my dog. You know, let's talk about what you mean by pure unlimited love.
Well, as I define it in the introduction to the book, pure love, first of all, what is love? When the well-being and the security of another is as real or meaningful to you as your own, and sometimes even more so, you love that person.
Okay.
But what is pure unlimited love? That's the deeper question. That's the more metaphysical question. And there I would say, quoting a friend of mine here at Stony Brook, it's the first thing you see when you close your eyes for the last time, comma, hopefully.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. So you say that we thrive best in love for the supreme being, ourselves, our neighbors, and natures. And these are the four loves that lead to fulfillment. Is there any, you know, hierarchy among those?
Well, they all mix. You know, I've written some books that have ignored the love for nature, and I've gotten some criticism for that from, among others, Mathieu Ricard, a leading Buddhist. So I wanted to bring nature into this very significantly, and there's a chapter, May You Cherish the Gift of Nature, which is important. So absolutely. And love of self is in the definition of love. So I don't want to leave those important things out at all. It's not just love for the divine, however that's construed, and love for neighbor, but it's love for self, nature, the divine, and neighbor.
Okay. Now, is this pure unlimited love, is this also what is commonly referred to as unconditional love?
No, because unconditional love is purely a human psychological interactional term. It goes back to the 1960s and psychologists at Columbia. This is much more than unconditional love. Sir John Templeton, one of my great mentors in life, insisted that ultimate love is ultimate reality. So he once, when he was dying in Lyford Key in the Bahamas, through his son Jack, he texted me and he said, I want you to write a book because I'm going to die before I can get that done. And my response to Jack was, Well, did he give you a title? And Jack said, yes, Ultimate Reality is Unlimited Love. I asked Jack, could we get a question mark for that? Because it's a little bit daunting. And so John came back with, yes, is Ultimate Reality Unlimited Love? So pure unlimited love has a huge cosmic metaphysical implication that I don't think unconditional love does. Although unconditional love is important, it's an expression of love generally, but I think this is something bigger.
Okay. All right. Well, unconditional love seemed pretty big to me. I remember reading a book on relationships a long time ago, and the author, it was a woman, I don't remember who it was, but she said, everybody wants unconditional love. And she says, but the only time that you're really entitled to it is during the first 18 months of your life. And if you didn't get it, and if you didn't get good enough mothering at that time, as they refer to it in attachment theory,
yes,
then chances are very good that you're going to be looking for it in every romantic or intimate friendship that you have for the rest of your life. And then she goes on to make the point, but that's not really reasonable. It's not reasonable to expect to get unconditional love from another adult. I mean, you can get it maybe sometimes when you don't need it, but she also makes the point, she goes, conditional love isn't that bad. You know, it's like, it's better than indifference, or it's better than, you know, conditional hate. Anyway, so what are your thoughts about all of that?
Well, it draws boundaries. You know, you've got to have some boundaries. Even the most compassionate people have boundaries against exploitation, against abuse, and so forth. So there's no such thing as a complete carte blanche, even with regard to unconditional love. But the beginning of the second path, and this book has seven paths, may you heal with kindness. And I'll just read a couple of lines from it. This is what you're talking about in early life. As we come into this world with our first breath, we are completely open. There is no judgment, no preformed sense of self or other. We are in that moment pure love. Before words, before rational thought, our visceral experience penetrates deeply. We sense the complete love of a parent holding us just after birth, as it flows into our every fiber of being. And if there is fear, worry, or rejection, that too is felt in full measure. And that does affect people over the course of their lives if they've not been able to attach to parental love. However, that problem can be overcome. It's a deficit. But if you have a good community growing up, if you marry the right person, spirituality can make a big difference. So it's not necessarily the end of life, but it makes you have to struggle a little bit, and life will be more difficult.
Right. Okay, so now what is all of this, how does this differ from what you call human love? You're not really high on human love.
So I appreciate human love, and it makes every day go round, but it's not as deep as pure unlimited love. I mean, let's look at human love. Even parental love that we're talking about has its clear limitations. People can love their children, but very unwisely. They can overindulge them. They can encourage them only to love the nearest and the dearest and not the neediest, or not those who are different or outside of their in-group. So a lot of times, parental love is unwise and myopic. And I would also suggest that a lot of human love is unstable. It's there today, but gone tomorrow. And so there's got to be something more than that, holding the universe together, if you will. You could also say that the in-group, out-group conflicts have been very difficult to overcome in human history. And so sometimes you need that sort of breakthrough from a source that is beyond ourselves. And I have a number of really interesting cases of how that's happened in people's lives.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, it's a fascinating book on many fronts. And you have this, you talk about, well, Maya Angelou once asked you, Stephen, this pure unlimited love idea, do you really believe in it? And what was your answer?
My answer was, I don't think we could be alive without it. I'm, right. And you know, this, my favorite poet is W.H. Auden, who was a wonderful writer who wrote a wonderful book called The Age of Anxiety. Mm-hmm. And he was teaching in a prep school up north of Oxford in England. And in just this one little paragraph, he captures most everything that I would want to say about the feeling of being invaded by pure unlimited love. So here's what he says. One fine night in June 1933, I was sitting on a lawn after dinner with three colleagues, two women and one man. We liked each other well enough, but were certainly not intimate friends, nor had any one of us a sexual interest in another. Incidentally, we had not drunk any alcohol. We were talking casually about everyday matters when quite suddenly and unexpectedly something happened. I felt myself invaded by a power which, though I consented to it, was irresistible and certainly not mine. For the first time in my life, I knew exactly what it means to love one's neighbor as oneself. I was also certain that, though the conversation continued to be perfectly ordinary, that my three colleagues were having the same experience. In the case of one of them, I confirmed this. And here goes the punchline. My personal feelings toward them were unchanged. They were still colleagues, not intimate friends. But I felt their existence as themselves to be of infinite value, and I rejoiced in it.
Wow.
Pretty powerful. And yeah. I also, you know, I get to Cambridge University every once in a while, and I always go to the Trinity College Library, because right in the middle of the library, in a beautiful glass case with wonderful teak ornamentation, are the notebooks of Ramanujan. Some of you may have seen the movie The Man Who Knew Infinity. So he grew up in southern India, and he had no mathematical training whatsoever. He would be praying at the foot of his goddess. He was a Hindu. And lo and behold, he would receive these interesting algorithms, and he wrote them down with his finger in the dirt next to his knee. He would come back a little later in the day, and he wrote them down in the notebook. And those two notebooks, the notebooks of Ramanujan, are considered to be the mathematical foundations of quantum physics. And here at Stony Brook, when I first came here, I met Jim Simons, a great mathematician who founded Renaissance Technologies, by the way, a great hedge fund, the most successful in history. And I asked him what he thought about Ramanujan. And he said, you know, not all wisdom, not all insight comes from our own resources. Sometimes we are simply the instruments of a higher mind. So I believe that, and I think that there's lots of evidence for it in human history, creativity, art, music, mathematics, and so forth.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I wrote a book called Intuitive Intelligence, which is quite a bit about that.
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Now, you talk about 10 forms of love or manifestations of love, and I'd like to just touch on that before we get to the 7 paths that the subtitle of your book refers to. So these 10 manifestations, compassion, forgiveness, loyalty, creativity, helpfulness, listening, mirth, celebration, carefrontation, and respect. Okay, all of those terms are familiar except for one, which is carefrontation.
Okay.
So what is that one about?
So one of my friends, now long since deceased, was a psychiatrist by the name of M. Scott Peck, who wrote a book called The Road Less Traveled.
Right.
And he's the one who invented the word carefrontation. I taught at Case Medical School in Cleveland for 20 years, long after he had graduated in psychiatry. But we were friends because he knew my interest in the theme of love. So he wrote me a lot of letters, and one day he wrote me a letter and I said, you know, love sometimes needs to be a little more than soft. He's a psychiatrist. He's dealing with personality problems of all kinds. And we talked about that over the phone once upon a time. And we didn't like the words tough love. Confrontation was just too counterproductive. And so he suggested that I use his term, carefrontation. And it works pretty well. It means that you straighten people out. You can help people stay on track without obliterating your relationship with them, and you can do it in a way that is loving and constructive.
Yeah, sometimes it's not so easy. You know, it's like people argue for their limitations or they argue for their addictions, and if you express concern for them, they can take it as criticism, and that's a very common challenge, carefrontation challenge.
It is. It's not easy to do a good carefrontation.
Right.
But compassion has its challenges too, because the way I define it, consistent with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, compassion is an affective or emotional empathy for someone in the condition of suffering, and it includes a willingness and a desire, if possible, to eliminate the source of that suffering.
Or at least reduce it.
Reduce it.
I mean, according to Buddhism, there's a lot of cause for compassion since suffering is endemic aspect of life that we have to deal with. Okay, and so how do you pick which form of love to focus on from day to day of those 10?
Well, I'm up early in the morning and I am mindful, I'm meditating, and then I move into thinking about the anticipated encounters I will have over the course of the day. I've got my family. If my kids are around, they happen to be older now, but my son is around right now and my wife. And then, of course, I'm going to come into work. I work in the physical space of the medical school. That's where this office is situated. And that means that I'm thinking about the people I know I'm going to encounter. And with some flexibility, I know that some of them, for example, need forgiveness, which is an expression of love. If somebody lost a patient through a medical error that was perfectly avoidable, they may be thinking about leaving medicine. So I need to approach them, and I have done that in the past successfully, and I've given them a quote from Martin Luther King, "Those who make no mistakes make nothing," and that's true. Mm-hmm. So then I know that some people no one seems to celebrate their lives. None of the key events or successes of their lives, they just sort of go unnoticed. So I think that celebration is an important expression of love. Listening, loyalty, creativity. Sometimes people hear are very creative, but they've run into a patch where they can't really make any new inroads into their projects. So then my expression of love for them is to sit down and really listen to them talk about their projects and hopefully help them come around and open up a new door. So all those things, and mirth, by the way, it's on my list. And I mean tasteful, uplifting, clean mirth, not derogatory, derisive, harsh mirth. And I'm capable of filling up a hallway with positive, almost dad joke level mirth. And in a millisecond, that can turn around a whole bunch of people who otherwise were in a fairly morose state of mind.
Right. Okay. Now let's talk about the 7 paths that you've laid out for us to practice love and all of its manifestations. And the first one is, may you give and glow.
Yes.
And then there's 6 more. So let's talk about those. Which one would you like to talk about the most?
Well, they're all important. The give and glow one I've been working on for about 30 years and done a lot of articles on it in JAMA, the New England Journal, and you name it. So that's incredibly interesting, because it turns out that when people are generous with others and volunteering, perhaps formally or informally, they do get certain kinds of internal benefits from it. So we did a nice survey of American adults, 5,000 of them, with United Healthcare, and we asked them, this was in very early 2010, we asked them, how much did you volunteer in 2009? Well, about 5,000. How much did you volunteer? They said, about 100 hours a year. And if you break that down, it might be a couple of hours a week. And then we asked them some positive psychology questions. I do a lot of positive psychology. Marty Seligman calls me one of the five rock stars of positive psych. So 73% said that volunteering lowered my stress levels. This is interesting. 89% agreed improved my sense of well-being. 92% enriched my sense of purpose. 68% made me feel physically healthier. 77% improves emotional health. And then here you go. 78% said that volunteering helps recovery from loss and disappointment. So we did a paper on widows and widowers who had been happily married for significant periods of time, and now they're on their own, and they go through naturally a period of grief and bereavement. So I got a call from the New York Society of Widows and Widowers. There is such a thing. And they asked me to come into New York, give a talk, which I did in a nice hotel in a ballroom. And I talked about these intrinsic benefits of helping others. And I thought people were really sold on it, but there was one guy in the back of the room who was frantically waving his hands. And he said, quote, "I don't care what you say, buddy. I don't do nothing for nothing." And I didn't quite know how to respond. It's in the book. But I did tell him, "So you're totally transactional. Are you happy?" He said, "No, I'm not happy." And we talked that through for a while. But I do think that the fact that people are so brainwashed into a purely transactional attitude in life prevents them from getting freed up to love in a more unlimited or an unconditional fashion.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that was a great little story too. I enjoyed that part of the book. Okay, so what else? Okay, you got these six other paths. We only have a couple more minutes.
Okay.
What else do you think we should bring up for our audience today?
Well, may you heal with kindness. And I don't just mean doctors and nurses. Like, everybody has the capacity and the possibility of approaching every relationship with kindness, with an intent to heal. It doesn't take special training. It just takes a devotion to the topic. And then the other ones are, may you follow your callings.
Right.
Don't get diverted by a little more prestige, a little more money, because your callings, that's how you give and glow over the whole course of your life. You find something that you really feel devoted to, usually using your talents and your gifts to the benefit of some identifiable constituency, whether it's students or people with Alzheimer's disease. I've done a lot of that. You know, you have to have a calling in life and devote yourself to it. And then the fourth path, may you raise kind children. My institute spent $4 million supporting great studies on how to raise kind children. And there are all kinds of practical tips in there. And then may you know the one mind. I am a believer in this. I am a bit of a Hindu and a Buddhist, I guess, in the idea of the one mind, and that our minds are not really derived from matter, tissue, brain. And then may you cherish the gift of nature, and may you honor the spirit of freedom.
These are also worthy of every single one of these is worthy of a lengthy conversation. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. There's so much more we could explore, but I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is www.stephengpost.com. That's Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-G, gpost.com. And thank you so much for being with us, Stephen.
It's a pleasure, Paolo, and I wish you well in Hawaii and in Portland.
Thank you so much. So for those who may have been listening to Pathways live on a Sunday morning and may have tuned in late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, producer of the Visionary I Ching Oracle, an app that supports great decisions and perfect timing. So glad you're with us today. Please note that you have the ability to listen to this interview and review hundreds of interviews in our online archive at divination.com, and that's spelled divination.com. And you can play or share this program whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast. Today we've been visiting with Stephen G. Post, author of Pure Unlimited Love, Science and the Seven Paths to Inner Peace.
With a foreword by His Holiness the Dalai Lama.
Right on. So profound. And I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is currently broadcast on KBOO FM in Portland, Oregon. And you can get a free subscription to our podcast, which you can find at divination.com or by searching Pathways Radio on Paolo's YouTube channel, where you can also give us a thumbs up and subscribe. Anyway, feel free to forward a link to your friends. And this is Paolo bidding you adieu and reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Podcasts. And thanks again to Stephen G. Post and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282B.